listening to Cinema Jaw, the greatest movies podcast ever, recorded on location this week in Matt's office in Chicago. My name is Matt Kay, and with me is
Rye, the movie guy. And this week on Cinema Jaw, Matt, we roll the dice as we cover our top five favorite gambling movies.
I hope I get a full house when I roll the dice.
What are you talking about?
What do you get when you roll the dice? Snake eyes?
What's that game? Craps? Do you play craps?
No, I play poker.
Yeah, see, I'm not a big dice guy either. When I go to Vegas, the few times that I've been over there, I'm strictly like, I hit the video blackjack or the blackjack tables or maybe some roulette, but I've never played the dice.
I love roulette. I suck at blackjack. Awesome at poker, if I do say so myself.
All right. Well, we'll leave it there.
Hey, the invitation is open, Rye, if you ever want to meet me out on the poker table.
Hey, we are going to put together a poker tournament with all the Jawhead guests that we've had in the past.
Oh, that would be awesome.
A Cinema Jaw poker tournament.
I get to take all their money. It's going to be great.
And we'll definitely be inviting this guest that we have coming up on the show here. Vince Labriola directed and wrote the film Fox the Gambler. It was just accepted into the Chicago International Film Festival.
Yeah, it's definitely. We both watched it this afternoon, and it's a great short film. And it's an honor to have a Chicago filmmaker on.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear how excited he is to get his film into the Chicago International Film Festival. It's a great film. We, in honor of Fox the Gambler, we are covering our top five favorite gambling movies. It's going to be a great list to cover. In addition to that, Matt, we go eye for an eye, interest or ignore on Gravity, the new Sandra Bullock, George Clooney vehicle, plus theater reviews, Ron Howard's Rush, and the small movie Short Term 12.
Yeah, you were on a tear. I was watching you on Twitter. I actually saw, finally on streaming on Netflix, is Searching for Sugar Man.
Oh, you did catch it finally.
I did, yes. Or can't Searching for Sugar Man. He's not right. Jewish. It's not can't, Sugar Man.
Can't wait to get your take on that.
Yeah.
Plus, Justin Timberlake has a new movie coming out, Runner Runner. So we're going to have a cinema war looking at Justin Timberlake's movie career. Plus, yourself versus Vince in Astronaut Movie Trivia.
Oh, my God.
Okay. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Jam-packed jaw, as always. So without further ado, we bring in our guest. He is writer-director of the short film Fox the Gambler, Vince Labriola. Welcome to Cinema Jaw.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on, Vince. I guess just get us started right off the bat. The film was accepted into the Chicago International Film Festival, which gets started here October 10th. How excited were you to have the film accepted?
Very excited. I mean, growing up in Chicago, I've always known that it's, you know, not only the best film festival in this city, but one of the top film festivals in the world. And so it's a real honor to be able to premiere it here and to be able to tell, you know, family and friends that they can come see my film, and it's such a high-profile festival. So that's very cool.
Awesome. And you were telling us right before we got started, this is actually your thesis film?
Yeah, it's my thesis film from USC. I got my MFA there. I finished it just about a year ago. You know, even though it is, you know, I finished the film to satisfy a course requirement, I'm very pleased with the fact that I think it's a professional quality work that just happens to be made with a primarily student crew. So it's exciting, but I kind of like to avoid the student film kind of term, because I think sometimes people make an assumption. They're like, oh, they're saying that because there's going to be flaws in it, or there's going to be some sort of limitation and forced on them by school or something. And I don't like that. I like it to be judged as a professional quality film.
Yeah, this is, I agree. There's a stigma attached to the term student film, and whether, you know, not completely undeserved in most cases, but having watched Fox the Gambler, I would agree with your assessment there. It is not a student film by any stretch. It's very high quality stuff.
Yeah, you know, it's I couldn't have done it by myself. Certainly, I had a, you know, very talented crew, and it premiered at the LA Shorts Fest a couple weeks ago, and that was nice because the majority of my crew is still in Los Angeles, so it was nice for them to get a chance to see it on the big screen as well. So all good stuff from this end.
Yeah, and tell us about that cast, Fox. Who is the actor that plays Fox? I love this guy.
Bruno is fantastic. He's been on, you know, several high profile shows. You know, he had a small part on The Office, which just recently finished. That was part of the reel where I saw him, and I immediately recognized him right away. He's one of those types of character actors where you've seen him in a lot of different places, and maybe you didn't even realize it. But he's a Chicago guy. He connected with the material, And I was excited to give him, you know, a platform to be able to kind of, you know, flex his acting muscles and hopefully, you know, create something that'll get him some more attention as well, because I think he deserves it. So it was a real pleasure having him as part of the film.
And it should be said, noted here, Matt, that Fox the Gambler is obviously Fox is a gambler, and he is going to this bowling alley, and there's this little tournament gets started here where there's some gambling action going on.
Sure,
in the game.
Every roll there's a little side bet going.
Yeah, and when you're doing a movie about bowling alley and bowling, you got to have interesting characters, and you got a short film, so you don't have a ton of time to dig into these characters. But I loved them nonetheless. As the match goes on, I love the competition between Fox and the gentleman who bets Fox if he can even win, and then as Fox gets close to a perfect game, actually bets him if he can complete the perfect game.
Yeah, I took it as a challenge to try and create a you know, deep world in a limited amount of time. I think you'll see a lot of short films where kind of the filmmaker will seize on one basic premise and then just kind of stretch that out.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, you know, I really like movies where you can go back in and kind of dig into them, and there's always something new to see. There's a line of dialogue that you find new significance in as you watch the film over and over again. So I realized that would be a challenge. You know, 15 minutes is not a lot of time, but I'm very happy with the fact that I had kind of like an ensemble feel to the cast, and that you feel like they're all real people inhabiting this world, and that was satisfying for me.
For sure. And yourself, are you a bowler or a gambler or both?
I do more bowling than gambling, both my parents bowled, my grandparents bowled, and so that was kind of an environment that I spent weekends in, and it was a lot of fun. You know, it was a way to spend time with my family, and that was one of the things that I tried to communicate through the film, was this idea that the Fox, you know, has this kind of this very special place to him, where not only does he go there because it's fun and he enjoys it, you know, having a beer and bowling, but he finds that to be like a family environment for him. And so I definitely drew upon my own experience in that regard.
And I got to ask, what bowling alley was that for our Chicago jawheads? It was like a southwest suburb from the shot of the city.
Yeah, it actually, we took a couple different elements to make that shot. The bowling alley is Baroque Bowl on 127th Street in Blue Island.
All right.
The skyline is a stock Chicago photograph. And it was funny, we were looking at them and trying to find just one that, you know, was aesthetically appealing. And then I kind of had this moment where I was like, wait, most times the skyline is shot from the lake.
Mm-hmm.
And really, if the building is looking at the Chicago skyline, it's looking at it from the city side, which is a harder photograph to find. So that one, I think the photograph was actually taken somewhere on the west side, maybe like the Garfield Park area.
Uh-huh.
And so we put those two together, and that's how we had that shot.
That's awesome, because that was such a – when it came across, I thought, wow, what a beautiful shot of the city. I didn't know where he got it from.
I know. Like at first, I was like, where am I? Because you see the skyline, and it sort of orients your body, and mm-hmm. you sort of know where you are in space if you live here in Chicago. But I couldn't really figure it out. It was a surreal moment watching the film as a Chicagoan to see the skyline. And it took me a second to realize that this was an imaginary place. But that was a really cool shot.
It was one of the things. We shot the entire film with the exception of that one shot of Baroque Bowl. We shot it all on various locations in Los Angeles. And so that was very important to me, to be able to make sure that illusion was maintained throughout the entire thing. It ended up that, you know, at the end of the day, what drove the point home was just having that skyline in the background. You know, it's one of those things where even subconsciously a person sees it and it grounds them at a particular place. And that's what we needed. So
Vince, before we move on, I want to ask you, what got you into the filmmaking? Take us all the way back to the start. Like, what was, you know, the thing, the catalyst that got you into this?
Honestly, it was one of the few things when I was younger that I was very much interested in as a hobby. You know, it started with me just watching a lot of films, but then it just kind of became something where I was like, I'm just going to give this a shot, you know? So I graduated from Loyola, Chicago here, with a bachelor's in creative writing and film. And then, I said to myself, well, I'm going to apply to USC. It's, you know, among you know, several other film schools, but I was like, yeah, I'm going to give it a shot. And lo and behold, I got in. It was an incredible experience. I mean, USC is one of those places where it's easy to be intimidated. You know, one building has Steven Spielberg's name on it. The next building has George Lucas's name on it. And then if you want to get away from those two, you know, it's the Robert Zemeckis building, which is to me the most intimidating of the three, you know, as one Chicago guy to another.
Sure.
It was just one of those things where I've just always enjoyed it. And I enjoy the pressures of making films. And I accept kind of the reality of the situation that oftentimes jobs, you know, they only exist for a very short amount of time and that you're continually looking for new things. And a lot of people find that to be a drawback. I really enjoy it. So it was just one of those things where at the end of the day, it works for me.
Awesome. Well, best of luck going forward. Are you working on any projects that we can expect in the near future?
Right now, I'm still writing some stuff. I want to see how Fox plays out. It's still out for consideration at somewhere near 15-20 festivals. Mm-hmm. Should hear back the majority of them by the end of the year. But right now, I work at a advertising firm as an editor. It's a nice 9-to-5 job. Work with some really cool people. So keeping busy, but. This Chicago Festival is, it's very cool. It's kind of the next big thing on my plate, and I'm looking forward to hopefully taking advantage of, a really great opportunity.
That's awesome. It's definitely a feather in your cap, man. Congrats on that.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm going to be all over the Chicago International Film Festival, so maybe I will bump into you there, Vince. It should be noted, Fox the Gambler is playing Tuesday the 15th, Friday the 18th, and Sunday the 20th. It gets three runs at the Chicago International Film Festival, part of the shorts package. So congratulations again, Vince.
Thank you.
So Vince is sitting in on this entire Cinema Jaw. He has his top five favorite gambling movies, as do me and Matt. It brings us to a segment called Eye for an Eye, Interest or Ignore, and Eye for an Eye is sponsored by
Movie Pass.
Whoa, unlimited movies in the theater for one low price, Matt.
That's right. You cannot beat it, Ryan. If you sign up using the offer code CINEMAJAW, you save $15 off your first month, and you also help us a little bit, which is a win-win.
Yes. So check out MoviePass.com, and we thank them for their sponsorship of CINEMAJAW.
Thanks, MoviePass.
Gravity. A medical engineer and an astronaut work together to survive after an accident leaves them adrift in space. The film stars Sandra Bullock, George Clooney, and Ed Harris, and is directed by Alfonso Cuarón, the visionary eye who gave us Children of Men. Matt, interested or ignore on Gravity?
I think we discussed this once, and I don't know. I'm probably going to see it, but it looks like crap. I'm going to ignore for the purposes of the show.
Wow. Wow, we got a big ignore.
But I'm going to go see it, so I can't stand Sandra Bullock. I think you have sort of drilled that into me.
Yes.
And it looked so silly when I saw this trailer in the theater, Vince. The people around me and just literally burst out laughing. It looked like ridiculous to them.
I don't know where you got off on that. I think the trailer looks amazing. Vince, we throw it to you. Interested or ignore on Gravity?
I'm interested. I think he has a good track record as a director. I think Children of Men was really ambitious, and everything I've heard about this film makes me want to go see it. I think James Cameron said something like it's like the space movie he's been wanting to see for like the past 20 years or something. I mean, it's getting some serious praise, and I don't know. I think at least as a watching it from a technical perspective, it's sure to be pretty impressive. So,
yeah,
I don't think you could possibly be totally disappointed in it. So I'll go see it.
And I believe the quote from James Cameron was after seeing it, "This is the best movie in space of all time," is his exact quote. And this coming from
Come
James Cameron.
Now.
That's heavy.
Come on
there.
Now. I don't care if God himself said that quote. The best movie in space of all time is Star Wars.
It can be argued. But here we go. I interested or ignore for me, Matt, and Sandra Bullock, you know how much I hate her. I just wish it was another actress, and this would be one of my most anticipated movies of the year. I'm still giving an interested, though. And two, like Vince sort of commented, the cinematography that Alfonso already uses in his movies, such as Children of Men, is spectacular. And what they're saying about this movie, you don't get that feeling of they're always above the earth. It's the earth is above them, below them. You really get the feeling like you're out in space. They say, see it on the IMAX screen. The bigger the screen, the better for this movie. So I'm pretty pumped.
It does look pretty. But, and here's a big confession. I've mentioned this on the show before.
You have not seen Children of Men?
No, I've seen it.
Okay.
I didn't care for it.
Oh, that's what it was. All right.
Yeah, I don't know why.
It's still a sin.
It didn't grab me. Just didn't communicate to me for some reason.
What a real shame.
Maybe I need to spin it again. I don't know why.
In the trailer, Matt, as you have commented, you see this huge accident take place in space, and Sandra Bullock gets knocked off her little harness and starts floating away into space, and I couldn't be happier. I start smiling. There goes Sandra Bullock, never to be seen from again. I just love the idea. And so it got me thinking, what actor or actress would you like to see float away in space and be gone forever, Matt? You got one?
Oh, man. Let's see. Put me on the spots. I would have to say, who do I absolutely loathe? It's tough because I forgive, you know? I like everyone. I don't know. Vince, you got somebody. We'll come back around to me.
Yeah, I would have rather have seen George Clooney get sent out into space.
Oh, wow.
Going for George.
I got some soft spots for George Clooney. When we get to the top gambling movies, I'll touch upon that a little bit more, but I think a lot of times he's one of the few actors, he just, when he's up there, I'm like, this is a big movie star, and I have a hard time empathizing with him.
That can happen a lot with these guys, and that's what took me so long to see Ocean's 11, which may come up in a little while here, but I stayed clear of it because there were so many big names. I don't like those movies a lot of times. I can't get into the movie then if I constantly see Matt Damon, George Clooney all in there. But for me, for my money, who I'd love to see float off and get lost in space, and I think his facial expression as he's yelling and you can't hear him would just be hysterical. I'm going Nick Cage on you.
Oh, wow.
Bye-bye, Mr. Cage. I mean, he's given us crap after crap for so long, and just to see him float away, yelling and just defenseless as he floats away, poor Nick Cage.
All right, so I think I would have to pick Keanu Reeves.
Whoa, poor Keanu's gone, huh?
No more Neo. As much as I love him in Bill and Ted and the first Matrix movie, he has done absolutely nothing since, and he's kind of a joke. Although that new movie he's got coming out is kind of interesting looking. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see. That's that kung fu movie that he's got coming out.
I'm a sucker for a good kung fu movie.
Now, I threw this out to the Jawheads on Twitter, Matt. Did we get any responses?
As ever, yes. Let's see. Tim Reminds 76 on Twitter. I hope I'm saying that right, Tim. If I'm not, forgive me. Said, I would like to say Miley Cyrus, but calling her an actress is a bit of a slap in the face to a proud profession. Not a big Miley fan.
Hey, right? I could see her go bye-bye with her twerking.
Yeah, she'd just be twerking off into the distance. All right, let's see. Greg F., who is books, not wooks, underscores between the words on Twitter, said, Shia LaBeouf, inject him into any film and see it instantly ruined. He gives an example, Lawless.
Yeah, I hated Lawless.
I liked Lawless. Oh. Vince, Lawless, do you see it?
No, never saw it, sorry.
All right, you should watch it. Let us know what you thought.
Stay away from it, Vince.
Let us know who you agree with here. Tim Bartlett, who is WB Lost Soul on Twitter, said, Adam Sandler, because it would be the funniest role he's ever had.
I'm sort of tired of Adam. I could see him float off to space. I wouldn't have an issue there.
Yeah. His glory days are behind him. Let's see. Ben Taylorson says, Hayden Christensen, hoping he finds a civilization that really had a lightsaber to punish him for crimes against cinema.
That gets a bell.
I got to agree with you there, man.
Well done, Ben.
Although Jake Lloyd would also be a nice choice. Let's see. Steven Spark Parker, who is underscore mildly amusing on Twitter, said, let's send the corpse of Orson Welles so superior alien life can reanimate him.
Hey, not a bad idea.
I like that.
I like the thinking there.
I saw the O, and I thought he was going with the Olsen twins at first. Let's see. Ballet Bookworm, Melissa W., says, does that mean they have to stay lost in space? If so, Lindsay Lohan, because we won't have to sit through I'm having a comeback / not again.
I didn't see
her big comeback, the Elizabeth Taylor film, did you?
No. I don't even know if that was even made.
It was a TV movie.
Yeah.
All right. Last one here. Say Kim from Kim Millward, who is at Kim N. Millward on Twitter, said, Gerard Butler, don't get how he keeps getting roles with such limited acting range. Does he intimidate casting agents?
Whoa, tough crowd. I don't find Gerard Butler to be that annoying. I'm not a huge fan of his, but...
He's a decent action star. I mean, really, who else action-wise do we have right now? You know, we're still putting together movies with Schwarzenegger and Stallone, for Christ's sake. These guys are in their 70s. I, for one, cheer for a new action star.
I agree.
I like Butler.
Jawheads, if we missed an actor or actress you would want to launch into space to say bye-bye to forever, shoot us a tweet at CinemaJaw. We will retweet it and get the discussion going. Matt, speaking of new movies, I got out and saw Ron Howard's new one, Rush.
I had a friendly disagreement with another driver about his wife.
Why? What did he do?
I'd be happy to show you if you like.
James can be a loose cannon. In terms of raw talent, there is no better driver in the world.
Why don't they make it safer?
The risk of death turns people off.
Who's that?
It's Niki Lauda.
He's just been signed by Ferrari.
I'm both quicker than you and better at setting up the car.
James Hunt is a proven winner at the highest level.
Is there a question or are you just trying to piss me off?
This is an incredible battle between these two drivers.
Ron Howard's latest film is not just a drama about Formula One racing, Matt. It's also a look at a great rivalry between two drivers and how the spirit of competition can bring out the best in people. In 1976, the racing world was sucked into the great rivalry between James Hunt, played by Chris Hemsworth, and Niki Lauda, played by Daniel Brühl. Although both drivers seek the same thing, a world championship, they could not be more different when it comes to their plans on how to win it. James Hunt is flashy, he makes dangerous moves on the track, and goes for the big win, not thinking about the next race or the one after that. Niki Lauda, on the other hand, is all about risk calculation. He understands you cannot win the championship in a single race. Their personal lives mimic their racing persona, with Hunt being the playboy that likes to party, and Lauda being the serious conservative who does not have time to make friends. I saw two of Ron Howard's past films inside of Rush, the first being Apollo 13. Like he did with Apollo, Howard captures the authentic look of an era. Both the 1970s and the glamorous look of Formula One are beautiful on the big screen. The second being Frost Nixon. We see a rivalry from two separate perspectives. Instead of setting up a single hero and villain, we root for both drivers at different times in the film. The racing scenes are gorgeous to look at. The story is very well told and will fill you with adrenaline and make you nervous at the same time. Hemsworth, Matt, he proved he is on the right track, no pun here, when it comes to his acting, as he was very believable as James Hunt. If you like cars, you like racing, this is a must. And even if you don't, I recommend checking it out. Ride the Movie Guys grade a strong 3 Jaws.
So you liked your Hemsworth here, huh?
Here, I mean, it was pretty impressive what he did here. I mean, at least... different character than Thor.
Did he put the hammer down?
He did not.
No.
But the ladies love him in this movie, as they do in Thor.
Does he take off his shirt?
Oh, yeah. I mean, within 5 minutes of the movie, he comes in. That's how the movie opens, is he was injured on the track, and the nurses go crazy when he comes into the hospital.
Oh, yeah. Well, he is a dreamboat, you know?
Yeah. But you know what I mean? Like, remember Ron Howard, he captured the Apollo sort of era so well.
Absolutely.
Authentically. And he did the same thing here with Formula One. I am not at all a big race car fan. But I got to give Ron Howard credit here. This was Jen, who I went with, you know, my girlfriend, not a big racing fan either. I wasn't really, you know, anticipating a great movie, but the story here about the rivalry really pushes it. I recommend.
Okay, cool. I'm excited to see it this weekend.
And the other movie I really want to call attention to, Matt, is Short Term 12. And it's actually tough to describe how much I loved this movie. It is clearly one of the best movies of the year, and it features one of the best acting performances in that of Brie Larson. The film centers on a foster home for troubled kids. By troubled, Matt, I mean kids who are abused by parents or adults to the point that they are at risk of committing suicide. The supervising staff is made up of young adults in their early 20s. The two main supervisors are Grace and Mason, played with much care by Brie Larson and John Gallagher Jr. Their daily duties include looking after the kids, getting them to be social in groups, and to check their rooms for objects that do not belong in the facility. We meet the kids they are looking after. One of them is Marcus, is just a week away from turning 18, which means he will have to leave the home. Through a couple of powerful scenes, our eyes are painfully open to Marcus's troubled past, and we get some understanding of what he must be feeling. I say some because as great as this movie is, it's difficult to ever fully feel what some of these poor kids do. We also meet Jaden, a young girl who is new to the home. Grace connects with Jaden as she sort of sees much of herself in her. And speaking of Grace, we learn more about her own troubled past and what led her to a life devoted to helping these young troubled kids out. Brie Larson is simply outstanding from start to finish, and this is not a simple character to play. I also cannot say enough good things about the screenplay written by writer-director Destin Cretton. It would be easy to make a movie on this matter and just focus on the kids, but by including the young supervisor's struggles as well, he has given us a true gem of a film. The movie opens nice. And closes with the telling of a story. Both are funny, yet one is sad and one is uplifting, and that sums up Short Term 12. Funny, sad, uplifting. What is a life, Matt, if it is not cared for? Ride the Movie Guy's grade, 4 Jaws, a jaw-dropper in A.
Nice.
I love this movie. It really just blew me away when I saw it. I wasn't expecting it to have the impact it had on me, but I'll just go ahead and tell you. I had tears coming down the cheek probably midway point.
Where is this? Where did you catch it?
It's here in Chicago. It's playing at 2 theaters. We're very fortunate. It is playing up at the Evanston Theater, and it's also playing at the AMC 21. But for the jawheads around the country that aren't in big cities, this won a major award at the South by Southwest,
sure.
Won the Audience yeah. Award out there. And it's getting a little bit of buzz and a little bit of traction. I just think it's too small to really catch that sort of festival buzz that a lot of these smaller films have the ability to do.
Is it going to get a major release, you think? Or
I think this is it. I mean, it's going to probably roll out and just hopefully get good word of mouth, like doing podcasts like this so that people go out and seek it. I would be floored to know that I see 5 better performances than Brie Larson, but I'm sure she isn't going to get an Academy Award nomination. And that's, if there's any justice, she should. And I think the screenplay should be nominated as well.
Did you happen to catch this one, Vince? It's, I guess, pretty limited.
No, I haven't. It sounds extremely interesting, though. I don't think I've even ever heard of it until you started talking about it, which is a shame.
Yeah, well, that's why we do this podcast, to enrich our jawheads with cinema knowledge.
and drink beers, yeah. You know, sure. That too.
So please, jawheads, you're going to have to look for it. It's called Short Term 12, 4 Jaws, a grade of an A. I loved it. You'll hear it on my top 10 list at the end of the year for sure.
I'm going to see it, dude. That was a great review.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
For sure.
It had nothing to do with gambling. These kids weren't in the foster home because they were gambling.
They probably gambled, though, you know?
But that is our topic because we have Vince on, writer-director of Fox the Gambler.
Oh, wait a second. You know what? I want to do this because I already owe you a dollar. We did gamble. I think it was 2 Jaws ago.
Mm-hmm.
I have money in my wallet.
Oh wow! This is a rare occasion.
I know. It is. It's very strange. I happen to have some dough. So why don't we go double or nothing, Rye? I'm just flashing my wad here.
Okay.
All right. So you see it. Double or nothing. Vince is the witness on who's going to win trivia.
All right. I write the questions every week, so it's very difficult.
That's true. Okay. How about the cinema war then? That's fair, right? We don't have to involve poor Vince.
No. We'll go with the trivia to make it fun. It's all for fun anyways. And I'll go with my money on Vince the Gambler over there. I'm taking Vince for the win.
All right.
Nice. Doubling down on you, Vince.
All right. Vince, I'll see what I can do.
All right. And Vince, you're getting a start at this week with your number 5 favorite gambling movie.
Vegas Vacation. I haven't seen it in a long time. It's one of those movies I just always remember just watching, like, with friends. It was fun. And I love the part where Clark goes up and he only has $5 for a $10 table. And he asks the dealer, he's like, you know, what can I do with $5? And the guy goes, I don't know, buy a bullet and rent a gun. It's a funny movie.
I have to confess, I have not seen this one.
What?
No,
oh, dude.
No.
Russ becomes what's his name, Papa Giorgio or something like that.
Yeah, honestly, it has been a long time since I've seen it. Probably like 10 years. But as soon as I made my list, I was like, I got to include that in there. It's sentimental value. It's just one of those movies.
Nice pick. I do want to check it out because I love all the National Lampoons and I love Chevy Chase. So
It's the fourth one in the series, and it's an awesome one. Definitely worth good gambling movie.
Matt, what do you got at five?
At number five, I have the first of the new era of James Bond films.
Unbelievable.
Did I steal yours?
It's also my number five as well.
Wow. Yeah, I'm talking about Casino Royale. The first James Bond film, if I'm not mistaken, maybe jawbox this, Elias, where he actually plays poker in the true sense. It's Texas Hold'em, right? I mean, it's not like the Deuce is Wild or, you know, the Crazy Eights or whatever. It's real poker. It was a really tense scene where they're playing the poker tournament.
Mm-hmm.
You get to see James Bond as the badass gambler, which we kind of always assumed that he was, but I don't think too many of the other James Bond movies actually capture that aspect of his expertise so well.
Right.
Casino Royale. It was amazing.
And, you know, I went back and I watched a couple of scenes today while I was doing the research here, and you're right. It's an integral part of the story is the poker tournament. It's not just thrown in there as a side story, you know? And I love at the end, I don't know where they play these high stakes games. I've never played where they actually have the plastic cards. They're beyond ships. They got those like long cards. What are those called? Do you know?
I do, but I can't remember right now. They're
throw in the jawbox.
They look like candy bars.
Yeah. And they put those chips in there. Then you know, you're really playing for big money. Nice pick. That's also my number five. I'll just sub one quick one in there that isn't a huge gambling movie, but you have to think of it when you're thinking Vegas and such, and that's Swingers.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Definitely a Vegas movie.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, obviously it goes away from that after a while, but early on when you're always talking about always double down, Mikey.
Yeah. Doesn't he take insurance in that?
No, he doubles down and he loses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to split aces.
Yeah, good stuff. We swing it into our fours. What do you got sitting there, Vince?
I had Casino Royale at four.
Oh, nice.
I describe it, I think it's less action and more suspense, and I liked that. I thought that the previous Bonds were really bloated, and it was just like seeing, you know, what kind of crazy action thing we could do, and it kind of lost some of the leanness and the fact that this guy, he's in high stakes all the time. He felt too superhero for me. And so that movie really brought it back to that. And it was suspenseful. That was great. I really enjoyed it.
It was cool. You know what's funny about this is I actually thought I was being really clever putting Casino Royale on my list. I thought no one's going to think of that as a poker movie. And here it is on everybody's list.
Yeah.
Nice pick. Matt, what do you got sitting at four?
At number four, another poker movie, Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. Mr. Madonna himself in his directorial debut. Knocks it right out of the park. Guy Ritchie, of course. And it's probably one of my favorite movies. You got, what's his name? Bullethead? Not Bullethead. Vince, help me out. The character that is the enforcer. Oh,
yeah, the big guy who plays like the hooligan.
Bullet Tooth?
What the hell is this? Yeah, no.
Throw it in the jawbox.
I know. We're loading up that jawbox early. But anyway, such a great scene where the villain, Harry, takes the big black rubber dildo and beats somebody to death with it.
Yeah.
Every moment in that movie is just pure style, and it's amazing. It's a shame he really hasn't been able to follow it up satisfactorily, in my opinion. Snatch, you know, not so much.
I agree. I agree with you. Into my number four, and this is, I'm probably put it on the list because I'm a bigger fan of the story than I am the actual adaptation into a film. I'm speaking of the 2008 Kevin Spacey, Jim Sturgis film, 21.
Really?
Like I say, I'm a fan of the story. I wasn't a huge fan of the movie.
No, the movie kind
of
sucked.
I know, it sort of did. But isn't the story of these MIT grads going over to Vegas and counting cards and having their own system just the coolest damn thing there is?
It's a great true story. The name of the book is Bringing Down the House.
Right.
And it's a fantastic read. Now, if you're talking gambling books, I would put that in the top three of all time, really. It's that strong of a story. I agree with you there, but the movie was such a disappointment.
It was a disappointment. But you know what I did like, too, is I always look at Vegas as being so evil. Like, oh, all of a sudden somebody's got a system that can flat out beat you.
Sure.
And, oh, you can't do that. I hate that kind of stuff.
I know. I agree it needed to come up on this episode, but I don't know.
That's where it sits for me, at number four. If this was you, Matt, it would have been your number one, and all hell would have broke loose here on the jog.
It would not have been my number
Betty
one.
Betty White. Oh, my God. Don't even get me started.
Betty White.
All right. We're into our threes. Vince, what do you got sitting at number three?
I have the Soderbergh Ocean's 11 at three. I Yeah, I think I'm in the minority there of people who have actually seen both of them. I think that they like the retro version better, but I don't know. Going back to George Clooney, it's one of the few times I watch him and he's kind of playing a movie star. Mm-hmm. And so the kind of nice moments between him and the other members of the team, like Tess and I think Rusty, I think that's Brad Pitt's character's name is Rusty. Between those guys, it seems more real because it feels like he's relating to other movie stars. I don't know. It's the only environment I tolerate George Clooney, I guess.
And it's an easy watch. I just recently saw it again. It just sort of flies by, you know what I mean? And so that kind of movie you could put on and it's like, wow, that was quick because it just burns through. They're explaining how they're going to rob the casino and then they rob the casino.
It's a fun little like mainstream popcorn heist movie. I like it too, man. Good pick.
All right, Matt, what do you got sitting at three?
At number three, I hope this isn't on your list really high up because I know you're a fan of this movie,
it is.
Ryan.
I'm sure it is then.
Let It Ride. Richard Dreyfuss is a gambler. Is this on your list?
Yeah, my number one, damn it.
Oh, shit. Are you serious?
Yes.
All right, then we'll wait. We'll talk about it
when we get to my number one. You know I'm a fan of Let It Ride.
I know, but I mean, we're talking gambling movies.
True, true. We'll just swing it over to my number three, okay?
Okay.
And at number three, I have a William H. Macy, Alec Baldwin, and actually Maria Bello's in this movie as well. Came out in 2003. It's called The Cooler.
That's a good movie.
You've seen this one?
Yes.
I love the premise for this one. Basically, Jawhead's, if you haven't seen it, William H. Macy's this kind of like unlucky guy. He's got the dark cloud over his head.
He's a professional loser.
Yeah. And
that's what he is.
He basically, the casino, when a table gets hot, asks him to come sit at the table because he's just got such bad luck, it permeates, and he just cools off the table.
Right.
It's hilarious. But of course, he's going to fly the coop, and Alec Baldwin's character needs him to stay in Vegas, so he tries to get Maria Bello to, you know, sort of come on to him so that he'll stay in Vegas for a while. And he starts falling in love with her. And that's what actually starts to change his luck.
Yeah.
Which is a hilarious premise. So now he's going to sit at these tables and it's not working anymore. The tables are just getting hotter because this guy's got good luck all of a sudden.
Yeah. That one scene where he's on the craps table and he starts winning thousands per roll. And then Alec Baldwin comes down. He's just smoking a cigarette and he's staring at him. It's a great tense moment. The two tremendous actors. It's a great movie.
Yeah, highly recommend if you have not seen The Cooler. I love that one. Vince, you got what do you got sitting at two?
Casino.
My number two also.
Nice.
See?
Yeah.
It's worthy number two.
It's the godfather of the 90s, I think. And I like it more than Goodfellas. I think I'm also in the minority there.
Big minority there.
Yeah,
Come on.
Yeah.
Bite your tongue.
Yeah, I don't know. I like I trade Joe Pesci for Ray Liotta. Ray Liotta is a big number two any day. I think he's just like out of control in that movie. It just has that really, really extreme kind of decadence, I guess. I like it. It's like it's a big glitzy train wreck. It's cool.
I mean, I've seen it a bunch of times. You're right. It is the godfather of the 90s, maybe even the Scarface, because there's an element of that in it as well, I think.
I think you guys are giving it way too high a praise.
Really?
To be honest. Yeah, I saw it only one time. I thought it was good, but no way would I ever say it's the godfather of the 90s. That's just me, though.
You know, that scene, though, where he's like, let me explain to you what I do. You know, and then he goes, I'm going to come to your house with a baseball. I forget what he says, but it's such a great quote.
You know, I think that you got the wrong impression about me. I think in all fairness, I should explain to you exactly what it is that I do. For instance, tomorrow morning, I'll get up nice and early, take a walk down over to the bank and walk in and see. And if you don't have my money for me, I'll crack your fucking head wide open in front of everybody in the bank. And just about the time that I'm coming out of jail, hopefully, you'll be coming out of your coma. And guess what? I'll split your fucking head open again. Because I'm fucking stupid. I don't give a fuck about jail. That's my business. That's what I do.
It's on every Joe Pesci soundboard on the internet. I love it. It's probably one of Joe Pesci's best roles. Can you agree with that, Rye?
Yeah, I would agree with that. Definitely. Pesci's got a lot of good ones.
He does. I think this one is probably his best.
Matt, what do you got at two?
Well, I had Casino, but I mean, if you know, I get the chance to sub one out, I'll throw one out. Let's go one that I don't think that you have on your list, Rye. Let's go Killing Them Softly. On your list or no?
Not on my list, no.
I think it's a good gambling movie. It's Brad Pitt, and he's sort of brought in to restore order to a little bit of a crime ring or mafia ring after a protected poker game gets robbed.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, poker and gambling is sort of at the heart of this story, even though that's not necessarily what the theme of the movie is about, but... There you have it. Killing Them Softly.
Nice, nice.
It's a sub.
At my number two, I have a 1973 classic. I've talked about it a few times here. Robert Redford, Paul Newman, The Sting.
Nice.
And obviously, I think when I brought it up last time was when we did con movies. I'm sure of it. And it obviously is more a con movie than anything, but they are conning them. Conning and gambling go hand in hand, Matt, as you know.
Yes, I do.
And, of course, they have the phony off-track betting, and there's a lot of, gambling, and you always got to let the guy win if he's going to go in on the con, you know
sure.
what I mean?
Oh, yeah, that's how you build it up.
Yeah, I mean, The Sting, you got Redford Newman. It's a classic if you haven't seen it. I've talked about it a few times here on the Jaw. Definitely check it out. And it's a Chicago movie. Win-win. We are into our ones. Vince, it's killing me. What do you got sitting there?
The Sting.
I love it. I love how he doesn't say anything while I'm saying my pickets too.
No, I like hearing it. It's a cool Chicago film. It's got a lot of suspense. I'm a sucker for anything with Robert Shaw. He's great in it. He's got that limp, and he's just like real menacing. He's one of the few actors that I've ever encountered where whenever I watch him on the screen, he makes a character feel like they could do like literally anything, and he has in that kind of crazy way.
Mm-hmm.
I obviously love him in Jaws. That's like one of those movies. The first time I saw it, I was like 3 years old, and it's just like the greatest thing ever still. And he's just so like nuts in that movie. He's just fun to watch. Like you just don't want to take your eyes off him because you have no idea what the heck he's going to do next.
Yeah.
He overshines Robert Redford and, can't even think of the other guy now.
Paul Newman. Yeah.
Yeah. Paul Newman. And so it's just a bit of a personal bias there, but it's a good film.
All right. We got a couple of classics hitting here. Matt, what do you got sitting at number one?
At number one, I have the film that everyone expected to hear out of my mouth the second they've read the title of this episode, and I will splash the pot all I want with Rounders. I didn't do a very good Russian accent.
No, you sure didn't. That was actually terrible.
Do it. Splash the pot.
Oh, I'm not good at doing it.
Come on.
No.
All right. You've seen this film, Vince? Rounders.
Sure.
Come on. Yeah. Matt Damon and
Ed Norton.
Ed Norton, thank you. And, of course, the great John Malkovich in the villain role. It's a great movie. It's probably the quintessential poker, especially Texas Hold'em poker movie of all time.
Two strikes against this movie. It brought Texas Hold'em to the forefront for a lot of people. Now, I'm not saying maybe yourself, but I was a big poker guy that liked to go play all these different games with my college buddies. And then this movie came out, and all anybody wanted to play was Texas Hold'em. Now I can't get a poker game together anymore.
Well,
people actually call poker Texas Hold'em.
Well, Matt's
the worst of it. Matt says, "Hey, you want to play poker?" Like, "Oh yeah, what are we playing? Like five card stud." No, Hold'em. No, then say Texas Hold'em. Don't say poker.
Well, it's a variation of poker, man.
Yeah, well, then maybe play that and other games if you're saying poker.
No. Yeah. But Texas Hold'em is poker perfected.
I hate people who call Texas Hold'em poker.
It is poker.
No, I'm not saying it isn't.
That's like saying I hate people who call the breaststroke swimming.
No, it's like if I invited you over to say, hey, you want to come over to my house and play sports? But all we're going to play is basketball.
No.
That's the same exact thing.
No, it's like calling. That's like saying cards. Cards is the generic term, but poker.
Poker's is the generic term too. There's tons of games as poker.
Yeah, but it's dialed down to there's a certain set of rules around poker.
Yeah, but I'm saying it's not just one game. Texas Hold'em.
I agree.
So if you say poker, it means it's open to all variations of poker games.
Okay.
So then I say, yeah, I'll come over. What are we playing? Oh, just Texas Hold'em. It's a tournament. Well, then say Hold'em. Oh yeah, yeah.
Do you want to play some Hold'em?
No. Now, on to my number one, which is, as Matt ruined, the 1989 Richard Dreyfuss classic, Let It Ride.
It's criminally low on my list. I'll give you that.
I mean,
it's a great movie.
My goodness. I watched a couple of scenes today just to remind myself of how hilarious this is. And Dreyfuss is a true treasure.
At his comedic peak.
Oh,
no
my
doubt.
Goodness. And there's nothing better, actually, than having a guy win at the track on a hot tip, and then he can't lose. He keeps letting this thing ride.
Let
and,
it ride.
Oh my God. It just keeps building and building. If you haven't seen Let It Ride, it is a gem. It is a Richard Dreyfuss masterpiece. I laugh. I love this movie.
Second, as far as Richard Dreyfuss goes, only perhaps to What About Bob? As far as comedic Richard Dreyfuss.
Sure, right. But he's in that same vein, actually, you know, where he's starting to lose it. He's sort of crazy at the track a couple of times.
I honestly think Let It Ride is a superior film.
I do, too. I do, far. Too. I love it. That was my number one, Let It Ride. Any honorables before we go to break?
Sure. I got a couple. Let's see. Maverick. I'm a sucker for that movie. It's a gambling movie. It's great. There's a little film I've mentioned before called Shade, which is of big interest to if you're a magician or a hobbyist magician or a gambler who's a cheat.
Yeah, that sounds terrible.
It's good. It's good.
One that should be mentioned I have not seen, and it's a sin if it doesn't come up, and the Jawheads are probably yelling at us, Cincinnati Kid.
Oh, yeah. Good call.
Yeah.
Eight Men Out.
Gambling, sure.
Yeah, gambling. Said Killing Them Softly. There's a documentary you should actually really watch. It's called Holy Rollers, The True Story of Card Counting Christians,
ooh,
which is kind of like an offshoot of the whole MIT team, but they actually were operating in the same casinos around the same time and they knew each other.
Wow.
And they're all like church-going Christians who started a card counting ring. they took Vegas for like millions.
Really?
Yeah, like something like $5
And they gave
million
it all to God.
No, not all of it. I kept some.
Jawheads, if we missed one of your favorite gambling movies and you have Twitter pulled up, shoot us a tweet at CinemaJaw. Let us know what it is. We'll retweet it and get the discussion going. When we come back, we have a cinema war looking at Justin Timberlake's career and also Matt versus Vince in Astronaut movie trivia. We'll be right back on CinemaJaw.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Hi, I'm Matt Kay with a CinemaJaw movie fact. In promoting Rounders, Matt Damon and Edward Norton played the $10,000 buy-in Texas Hold'em Championship event at the 1998 World Series of Poker in Las Vegas. During the first 4 days, Matt Damon had pocket kings and was knocked out by former world champion and poker legend Doyle Brunson, who held pocket aces. And that is your CinemaJaw movie fact.
To get ourselves a treat.
And we are back on CinemaJaw, hanging out with Vince Labriola, who is the writer-director of Fox the Gambler, which is playing at the Chicago International Film Festival on Tuesday the 15th, Friday the 18th, and Sunday the 20th. Chicago Jawheads, buy your tickets, support local artists.
Couldn't have said it better.
Matt, Justin Timberlake has a new movie coming out.
He's a local artist too, right?
Has a new movie coming out called Runner Runner, and we are going to go have a cinema war like you wouldn't believe. But before we get there, we threw a few items in the Jawbox, and it's hot in your office. It's got to be even hotter in the Jawbox.
Oh man, I know. I can smell it. I can smell it. I'm afraid to open it.
Yeah, there are actually days where I just don't want to open it, but here we go.
What's your pleasure, Mr. Cotton?
The box.
We got a box! Oh, what's in the box?
What's going on, guys? Matt. Oh. Matt, you haven't cleaned the bucket, I'm telling you, man. That's not my problem.
I gotta empty the bucket.
Yes, exactly. Jeez. All right. What's up, everybody? Here we go. There's a bunch of gambling stuff, questions here. Was it the first time that James Bond played poker? Well, I didn't have time to watch all the movies, so I'm just going to go ahead and say yes.
All right.
And the chips, the slab
Some
chips.
Good fact checking right there.
Yeah, I love it.
Those slab chips are poker plaques, and I believe they use
plaques,
them in
yeah.
Europe.
Ooh, nice. Yeah. Mm-hmm. High stakes, Matt. High stakes. Yep.
All right. And
I raise your plaque by two plaques.
That
I see your two plaques. And raise you five.
There's
plaques.
A dentist joke in there somewhere, but I don't know. I don't got time for that. Okay, so in Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, the bad guy or that big guy.
Yeah. He's the enforcer, yeah.
His name's Big Chris, I believe. They didn't have
his,
Bullet.
His name
head.
Is Bullet Tooth or something you in another they, film.
Okay.
It's a different role. I got him mixed up.
But they have listed as Big Chris here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And don't mess with his son.
Word.
That's, yeah.
Cool.
Some good advice.
Is that is that it?
Yeah, yeah. I'm gonna gamble later tonight as I try to escape the Jawbox, but I always get caught, just like Jesse in Breaking Bad. Second best episode. Anyway, guys.
All right. Thanks, Elias.
Bye.
All right, Matt, it brings us to a segment we call
Cinema War.
And Cinema War works like this, Jawheads. This is where me and Matt bet on a topic each week, and our guest this week, Vince, gets to play judge and jury and executioner and determine who he thinks won this Cinema War. And it's very important because me and Matt are battling for 20 seconds of jaw time to rant and rave on whatever we want. Now, like I said, Justin Timberlake has a new movie coming out called Runner Runner, and we were wondering, he's a pop star, just like Will Smith sort of was, and Will Smith made the jump to the big screen, and I said to you, do you think Justin Timberlake can be as big or bigger than Will Smith someday?
Mm-hmm.
Bam! Cinema War. Elias, tell the jawheads at home what today's Cinema War topic is.
Today's Cinema War topic, can Justin Timberlake make the jump to the big screen and be as big or bigger than Will Smith? Matt, you'll be fighting, yes, he can. Rye, you'll be fighting, no, he cannot. Let the Cinema War begin.
All right, I have to admit, when I first heard that Justin Timberlake was going to be acting in a film, I thought, oh, geez, here we go with this crap. But that just has not been the case. The guy has proven consistently that he can act, and that has even got some range.
Ooh, Matt, there is no doubt that Justin Timberlake is an extremely talented individual, but making the jump from pop star to actor on the scale Will Smith did, it's difficult to do. I do not see JT ever being able to solely carry a film like the way Will Smith does. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, but we probably could have said the same thing about the Fresh Prince. His appearances, JT's appearances on SNL as guest host, blew us all away, and we learned that this guy was actually a very talented comedian, which he brought to the screen in films like Bad Teacher. And when he played Sean Parker on The Social Network, he proved that he could do some drama as well. This guy's got serious talents.
But Matt, as we said, Matt, Timberlake's biggest role to date is The Social Network, which was a nice supporting role. As for his first big action movie, it came out a couple of years ago, and it was called In Time. What was it about? Beats me. It was such a dud, like most of Americans. I never bothered to check it out.
All right, back in the day, all major leading men were song and dance man types. You had to be multi-talented to be on the screen, and I, for one, am kind of happy to see a return to that. Can JT replicate Will Smith's career? You bet, and he will.
Oh, you laid right into my third point here, Matt. Will Smith, get a load of this. Will Smith's third film he ever did, Bad Boys. His fourth film, Independence Day. His fifth film, Men in Black. There are few actors in the world who could top that, and JT is definitely not one of them.
All right, I don't know if he's going to get to the astronomical heights of Mr. Blockbuster, summer movie box office guy, Will Smith, but he's going to get close. Timberlake is popular with men and women, young and old. His mass appeal and multifaceted talent will certainly lead to bigger and bigger roles. The only thing that's going to hold him back are his own decisions, but JT is a star and will continue to be on the silver screen.
Hey, I like Justin Timberlake, and he has made smart choices so far by picking some smaller roles in good movies. But as he tries to step up to leading man, such as he did in Time and Trouble with the Curve, we see he is not cut out for the big time when it comes to the movies. The Fresh Prince is still king.
Ooh. Wow.
Wow. Matt, oh, man, this I got to tell you, my head hurts from bumping into your empty cranium. We throw this one over to our judge, our jury this week. Vince, what'd you think of this Cinema War?
Well, I got to say, at the end of the day, I think you got to see, you know, who had the most box office success. And at the end, that's Will Smith all day. I don't think that Justin Timberlake can replicate Will Smith's success. I'm going to have to throw this one to Rye the movie guy.
Nice.
Does that mean I owe you a dollar? Or wait,
that we're going on trivia, but if you want to switch it to that.
No, too late.
There are tough comparisons because, you know, JT's still got time. But what convinced me was the, you know, seeing that string of hits that he put out. So hits that were in like crazy different genres too. I mean, Bad Boys, and you know, is this really high octane thriller. Him and Martin Lawrence. And then he goes on to Independence Day, where he's paired up with Jeff Goldblum, and it's still just as compelling. There are very few actors that can do that.
Thank you. I agree. Wow, I'm winning them left and right here, Matt. That earns me 20 seconds of jaw time to rant and rave on whatever I want. And I want to take this 20 seconds to say, as much as I love Little Miss Sunshine, I could not get over this just ridiculous part when I recently rewatched it. I'm speaking of the scene where Paul Dano's Dwayne finds out he is colorblind while driving in the Volkswagen. He's something like 18 years old, and I'm sure this would have come up much earlier in his life. Was he ever asked to put on a blue shirt, Matt? Or grab a yellow towel? There is no way someone goes 17 years in their life without noticing they're colorblind.
That's your rant. Okay. It's good.
It bothered me, so I thought, why not bring it up when I rant and rave?
Yeah. That's what the rant's all for.
That's what it's for.
Whatever you want.
Yeah. All right, Matt. In honor of Gravity starring Sandra Bullock and George Clooney, we are playing astronaut movie trivia.
I wish I was Sandra Bullock blind.
We have a dollar on the table. Matt.
That's right.
It is double or nothing because we are gambling this week. My money is on my man, Vince, in astronaut movie trivia. Vince, you're our guest. You get to choose if you want to go first or let Matt go first. There are steals if a person doesn't know it. And if you get stuck on one, our engineer, Elias Rodriguez, will help you out with a clue. You get one trip to the ER.
I'll let Matt start off. Go right ahead.
Ooh, wow. Right. Question number one, astronaut movie trivia to Matt K.
All right.
What is the name of the 1986 movie that starred Leah Thompson, Kelly Preston, Kate Capshaw, and had the tagline, "An impossible mistake put them into space"?
Kelly Preston. Say the actresses one more time. Leah Thompson.
Leah Thompson, Kelly Preston, and Kate Capshaw. And had the tagline, "An impossible mistake put them into space."
Lost in Space? I have no
idea. You got a chance for a steal right away here, Vince.
First one's supposed to be easy, right?
I know. I thought this was an easy one. 1986 movie. So they were young.
86, wow.
Yeah, I have no idea. The only Kate Capshaw movie I can even think of is Temple of Doom. That's it.
Wow, we were looking for Space Camp. Space Camp.
Oh, yeah. Wow, I forgot all about that movie.
I thought it was an easy one because I thought everybody knows Space Camp. Yeah. Oh, boy. All right, it is 0-0, and question number two is over to Vince. Charlton Heston, along with two other astronauts, crash land on an unknown planet in this 1968 classic.
Planet of the Apes.
See, now that one was easy.
Wow, there we go. Vince is on the board. I love it. One to nothing, Vince. Question number three, Matt. In Apollo 13, Tom Hanks played Jim Lovell. Kevin Bacon played Jack Swaggart. Which actor played the third astronaut in space, Fred Hayes? Who was up there with Kevin Bacon and Tom Hanks in Apollo 13? In space, mind you.
Was it Tommy Lee Jones?
Oh, wow. Vince, you could blow this thing wide open. Who is the other actor in space with Kevin Bacon and Tom Hanks in Apollo 13?
Bill Paxton.
He nailed it. He nailed it. Vince, I'm going to split a beer with you when I win this extra dollar from Matt.
Oh, man.
It is now 2-0, Vince, and question number four is over to him. Who is the only actor to appear in both The Right Stuff and Apollo 13? You do have a lifeline, a trip to the ER if you need it.
Let me take the trip to the ER.
Whoa! We got a trip to the ER. Elias, what is the name? Who is the actor who appeared in both The Right Stuff and Apollo 13?
Your clue is Q the Sun.
Wow. Q the Sun. Sounds like a famous line this actor may have delivered at some time, Vince.
Okay. I'm going to say Ed Harris and the lines from The Truman Show.
That's a good clue, man.
Wow, great clue. Thank Elias. Or not. Hey, it is now. He has blown this thing wide open. It is 3-0, Vince. Great clue, Elias. And question number five is over to Matt. What is the name of the 2011 found footage film that had the tagline, "There is a reason we've never gone back to the moon"? Came out in 2011, found footage film with the tagline, "There's a reason we've never gone back to the moon."
I can't get the stupid Transformers movie out of my head. I know, obviously, that's not found footage.
You do have a ER.
All right, fine. I'll go to the ER.
Back-to-back trips to the ER.
I got
to
get some points on the board.
Elias Rodriguez, what was the name of that 2011 movie?
Your clue is Last Mission to the Moon plus one.
That's right. You know what? This film has just become streaming on Netflix. It is Apollo. See, here's the thing. What was the last mission to the moon? It's Apollo 14.
Wow, that is a negative. Jesus. Vince, you can clobber him here. Do you know the name of it?
Let's go with Apollo 18.
I was going to say that. There was an Apollo 17.
He nailed it. He nailed it. Yes, Apollo 17 was the last mission to the moon. Apollo 18 is the found footage film. This is Vince all day, all night. It is 4-0, Vince, and question number 6 is over to him. The 2006 film, The Astronaut Farmer, was about a man named Charles Farmer who tries to build his own rocket in his barn and send himself into space. What actor played Charles, the lead in the film? Who starred in The Astronaut Farmer?
Man, I have never heard of that. So,
let me tell you, Vince, I've seen this movie, I reviewed it, and it's a hot pile of crap.
Okay. I'm trying to think of somebody who fits that profile. Let's try Paul Giamatti. That doesn't sound right, though.
No. Matt, you got a chance for a steal.
I like me some Giamatti, man. I don't think he's not a hot pile of crap, necessarily. The Astronaut Farmer, huh?
Use your trip to the ER. You got a guess?
Yeah. Justin Timberlake.
No, we were looking for Billy Bob Thornton.
Oh, now Billy there's Bob a hot pile. Thornton. Yeah.
It is still 4-0. Question number 7 is over to Matt. Tim Robbins.
I like me some French fried potatoes.
Tim Robbins, Gary Sinise, and Don Cheadle starred as astronauts in this Brian De Palma film that came out in the year 2000.
Come on, man. No Armageddon questions.
No. Tim Robbins, Sinise, Cheadle in a Brian De Palma film came out in the year 2000. Any guess here?
No, I should know this. I'm it's I got nothing.
Wow, Vince,
Space Camp 2.
No chance. Vince, you got a chance for a steal here.
It's a shutout.
Mission to Mars.
Oh, wow.
Jesus Christ.
I can't wait to take this dollar from Matt. I'm so happy. It is a shutout, and there's nothing better. Vince, the smile on my face says it all here. There's nothing better than a shutout for Matt K.
I don't think I've been shut out in a long time.
It's probably been well over a year. I'm not even kidding you. Vince,
least.
Please answer this one correctly. The only time, question number 8, the only time James Bond went into space was in the film Moonraker. Which actor played James Bond in said picture?
Roger Moore.
He nailed it.
There's only, I mean, that's multiple choice. I mean,
well done, Vince. Well done. Wow. He clobbered him 6-0.
I would take my hat off to you, but my headphone things will fall off. So no, I tip my hat to you, sir.
No reason for a jawbreaker, but we do have him on hand in case it came down to a tie. We would have threw this one over to you, Vince. Better astronaut, Tom Hanks in Apollo 13 or Sam Rockwell in Moon?
Tom Hanks in Apollo 13.
That is incorrect. It's actually Sam Rockwell in Moon.
Okay.
The actual
He's good too.
I'm on the board.
The actual jawbreaker was this. Age of Roger Moore, closest to. Matt, you got a guess?
Roger Moore is a little older than my father, I would say, about, let's say, 74 years old.
Elias, can you lock in Matt at 74? Vince, you got a guess?
Yeah, his current age right now?
Yep.
No Googling.
No, not Googling. I'm just thinking higher or lower than you. I'm going to go 73, I think.
Oh, we would have gave that one to Matt. 85.
Yes.
85, guys.
Holy crap. Wow. Yeah. He's an old man.
Roger Moore is up there. Wow. But Vince wins this one in convincing fashion, 6-0.
Well done, Vince. Congrats.
Thanks.
Hey, it brings us to the end of a great jaw. And first and foremost, we got to thank Vince Labriola. writer-director of Fox the Gambler. Get out there and see it, Chicago Jawheads. For the Jawheads listening to this that want to find out more about the film, where's the best place to find something online, Vince?
You can go to our website, foxthegambler.com, and then you can also search Fox the Gambler on Facebook, and please like us. That would be great.
Vince, thanks again for coming on.
All right, I really appreciate you guys having me on the show. I had a lot of fun.
We also got to thank our sponsors.
Yeah, thanks to the New 400 Theaters.
There is no better theater, Matt, in all of Chicago than the New 400 Theaters. They are located in the Rogers Park area of Chicago.
Yep, and the best thing is they have a full liquor bar right at the concession stand. They also have the best prices on first-run movies in the city. Check them out at thenew400.com.
Yes, also thanks to MoviePass and the best in the biz, our engineer, Elias Rodriguez.
Thanks, guys.
He really is the best in the biz.
Yeah, we're not gambling on that one.
No, but I'm still sad I lost $2.
Oh, I can't wait to take that $2 and go blow it on something.
$2!
Thanks again, Vince. Thanks again. Until next week, Jawheads, check us out on Facebook.
Follow us on Twitter.
And keep on jawing about the movies.